You can find Level Up Podcast on lulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at lulpodcast. You can also subscribe to LUL Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. Level Up Language Podcast is sponsored by Davis School District and Clearfield High School. Welcome to Level Up. In this episode, we will talk about advanced opportunities that are available for students, specifically Advanced Placement, International Baccalaureate, and Concurrent Enrollment. These are programs that we currently offer at Clearfield High School and that you may offer currently or in the future. We'd like to talk about what these opportunities consist of and some things we do to help our students succeed in these endeavors. Think about what you do and can do in the future to provide more opportunities to your students as we get in to Level Up. Welcome to Level Up. I'm Roger Burt, joined by our other hosts today, Brandon Welker and Miles Nance. Davin Lemke saw the pizza guy walking by and we haven't seen him. Today we will also be joined by Connie Curl, our International Baccalaureate Program Coordinator, to talk about what IB is exactly and the benefits that students can get out of the program. Other advanced opportunities that are available, at least at our school, include advanced placement and concurrent enrollment. All of these options have the possibility of giving students college credit while in high school and really push students to work in the higher end of the intermediate mid-range and beyond. While not all teachers, quote-unquote, teach these courses, we all play a critical role in a student's acquisition of the language and getting them to the point where they can be successful in an advanced level class. Our first question for Connie, then, could you give kind of a breakdown of what IB is, kind of overall, and then we'll eventually kind of jump into the language aspect of it?
Sure. IB began in the late 60s as a way of building the gap for students whose parents were diplomats, ambassadors, high up in the military who moved around a lot. So the fundamental idea that they started with was a core curriculum that was the same from country to country. As that developed, it moved worldwide, of course, and the philosophy became not just academics, but the student as a whole person. So the student as somebody who's active in the community, who takes their knowledge and their education out and makes a difference in the world. The full program is known as the diploma program, and that is made up of grades 11 and 12. And in those 2 years, the students have to complete six classes in six areas. So language acquisition as a second language, histories and arts and maths and sciences. Then the other three core components are the theory of knowledge class, the extended essay, and the CAS, which is service, activity, and creativity. So those things all work together to kind of reach that mission of the full student. I think probably the greatest benefit, while there's benefits for college credit, and moving forward in college while you're still in high school, I think the best benefit is the depth of thinking that happens in IB classes. Students are challenged to think, and I see kids all the time who are prepared as far as credit, but that launches them into college as a sophomore, and they're not yet prepared to discuss like a sophomore in college, to write like a sophomore in college, to think like a sophomore or junior in college. And I think IB gives that to students when they go through the whole program.
My brother-in-law went to a school that is known for helping students get an awful lot of college credit and things. And then he was kind of scared when he started college because he thought, I'm basically a junior. I'm not exactly sure what direction I want to go. Uh-huh. And that's what I see with our students here is I think that theory of knowledge class, and I still am not totally sure what happens in there, but I know that those students, it's a lot easier to have certain types of discussions with them because you can tell that they see things differently. They can view things from different perspectives. And they question things kind of differently. I'm not sure really how to explain it, but they seem to question things differently. And it's really fun for me to teach them.
Well, I've noticed, because I've just switched from my seniors that I've had for a year to a new batch of juniors. And as I've reflected on this last year of the seniors and what we did in order to get them thinking and moving towards questioning everything, it's funny to watch this new group of juniors and reflect back on those seniors that they were like that they were hesitant, that they'd look at me like, can she talk about that? Or can I really say I disagree with her? And they move forward and they figure out it's okay to question what Mrs. Curl says. And it's okay to have a difference of opinion and still be polite. And it's okay to think that math isn't perfect and that we don't know everything that's there is to know. So it really does open their minds. I think the TOK aspect is a really fun part that I'd like to see spread more into our other pieces of curriculum.
Yeah.
I agree. I was just going to say, in my classes, I hear things like, oh, in TOK, we learned about this. And sometimes I have to say, don't TOK me right now. You are going to turn this in right now, and you have no options about this. But yeah, no, I like the things that I hear, too. I've always thought, I kind of want to look at the books or whatever, the material, and think about some of these things myself. Because I think not only is that important for a student, you know, to have to be prepared in college, but as a teacher now who's teaching all kids, to be able to think that way and kind of deliver messages so that they understand that thinking critically and even opposing an idea or something is perfectly okay.
Well, so, I remember an eon ago when they talked about Bloom's taxonomy, and I thought, that is the stupidest thing. They wanted me to do the Bloom's taxonomy in my lesson plans. I thought, I'm back to Bloom's taxonomy. And what are the questions? And I'm trying to ask better questions to get them to think. And then it occurred to me, oh, I really need to tell them this is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So once I became explicit about, I want you to learn how to apply things. I want you to learn how to synthesize things. I want you to question. It opened up a whole new realm for them, that there's different kinds of questioning. There's things that you assume that they know or that they've come to by themselves that they really haven't. And
yeah, just helping them realize what they're doing and when they're thinking, the metacognition part of whatever that is, right? Thinking about and being able to systematically deepen their questioning and things like that. That's, I wish I could go through that class, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too.
I'd be very intimidated if you were both in my class.
Oh, no, I'd do it.
I'd be all over it. And again, I don't know exactly how it works in there, but the more, like Brandon says, the more I hear students talk about, oh, yeah, we did this in TOK today, or, well, in TOK we learned, the more I think, this sounds like it just needs to be a required class for everyone. Like, it's just so valuable.
I've even started telling the kids, if you don't want to do the whole program, you need to do the language pieces and you need to do TOK. Because not necessarily to self-promote my class, because ideally I wouldn't want more than 20 kids in the class, but because of the thinking that goes on, the different types of thinking that happens in those three classes, is so fundamental to not just college, even, you know, to thinking through life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we handle so much information in this world today that you've got to be able to think through it.
I'm curious if you could maybe walk us through some of the more common questions you get from prospective students, parents, and I'm assuming one of those is maybe, can you compare and contrast AP with IB?
Mm-hmm. One of the first ones I always get when they find out that TOK is at 6:15 in the morning is, why does it have to be then? And honestly, I just tell them, we can't squeeze any more into your schedule. And they go, oh, okay. So the kids, especially those kids who are leaving campus for a period to go across the street to seminary, they just don't have room. And even as the kids try to get their financial lit in and their this in and their PE, I don't know how many diploma kids have come close to not graduating because of PE, you know, because they haven't been able to get it into their coursework. So that's one of the first ones. But they also want to know the difference between AP and IB. And I usually tell them, first off, let me say, I don't think there needs to be a competition between AP, IB, and CE. I think each one fits a different student and where they're at in their life and in their journey of education. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think there are kids that are ready for IB, and there are others that are ready for AP, and there are others that are ready for CE, and they're going to benefit from the program that best suits them. That said, I think IB, and the biggest difference, is that depth and the depth of thinking that goes on. I also think it's in the core pieces. I don't know of another program at Clearfield that requires an independent research like the kids have to do with that extended essay. I don't know of another program that ties them to the community other than National Honor Society a little bit and student government, which is limited in who can be involved.
Right.
That ties them into, how does my knowledge benefit other people? How does what I do and what I create benefit other people? I think that's one. Ultimately, I think they can earn the same amount of credit going any path that they want. So it boils down to, are you a deep thinker and you want to be challenged in your thinking? Are you somebody who wants to get your generals out of the way to save money, and you're not that interested in writing a ton and that kind of thing, and not having to take a big test at the end, CE. So I think it depends on the individual. And that's why when kids ask me, I like to kind of talk to them first. You know, what is it that you see in your education? What is it you like about learning? What is it you don't like? The other question I always get is, I've heard there's no room for anything else in your life but IB when you do the diploma program. And this group this year has done more to show me that that's not true than any other group that I've dealt with. This group, they really caught on to the idea, if I balance my time, if I plan out and make sure that I have a plan of, this is coming down my way, I've got to be ready for it, which means I need to take care of my IA in English before I move on to my IA in Spanish, and I better get my EE out of the way before all of that starts in February. They really have learned how to do that. And I think that's a huge benefit for college.
Absolutely.
Because nobody's checking up on you. The teacher isn't requiring your nightly math homework or your citation page or whatever. They're expecting that you can do that, particularly by the time you're a junior.
Could you break down briefly what IA, EE, all those?
All those terminologies, which float around out there like crazy. In fact, we were talking about TOK, which is theory of knowledge. EE is the extended essay, which is a 4,000 word independent research paper. And IA is an internal assessment. And those are assessments that the teacher does with the student, in class. Usually it can be anything. It can be a paper. It can be a presentation. It can be an interview. So there's all different types of assessments that way. And then you have your external assessments at the end of the 2 years or 1 year that are like an AP test, but not.
Right. That's how I've always kind of viewed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are, I guess I should say, skills that completely translate to both, in my view. Yeah. And then the extended essay, I've only ever had one do it in Spanish.
In Spanish?
And I understand why, because it's a beast in your primary language.
Primarily. I can't believe anybody even tackled it.
Yeah.
That's pretty admirable. If not crazy.
Yeah.
That seems like a silly question. I didn't realize that. So the 4,000 words are in Spanish? Or is it abbreviated a little bit because it's in a...
No. Yeah, they did it in Spanish. We kind of had the question because it was about a topic in the Spanish-speaking world. And I think it was something about the way the student initially approached it. That it was, as we spoke with another IB teacher at the time, what direction we needed to go. He said, no, it looks like the way things have started, it all needs to be in Spanish. But I mean, the student did a pretty good job, all things considered. But I remember seeing that and advising the student on that and thinking, this is what I did in my master's, just tapered down.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, boy, yeah, if it's well put together and if they're led into it well, like what an opportunity for them to learn and grow and to be able to succeed at the next level.
Well, and then when they go to interview with schools and apply for scholarships and they can talk about, I've done this independent research project. I've done all this service in my community where I designed this and then did this. I've participated in this class where we challenged thinking, and that gives them that little bit of distinction.
It's impressive.
That can help them. And I don't know that in the past we've always taught them or shown them how to use that to their advantage. That is one of my goals in the next couple of years, is to really show them how to highlight what those pieces have taught them.
With that, let's get into the different tasks that IB students are asked to complete. First, we'll take a look at our written task. Brandon, can you talk to us a little bit about some of the requirements for an IB written task?
Sure. One thing Connie didn't mention, we didn't really ask her about this, but she was talking about how there's a diploma program, which is the full program. You can also kind of a la carte the classes and get a little credit depending on.
Way to throw some French in there. We appreciate it.
A la carte. you can do that with, you kind of pick a few classes and take them. You don't get the same college credit. It kind of depends on what you're taking, but, in addition to that, within the diploma program or within each class, there's a couple different levels, right? There's, in foreign language in particular, there's ab initio, which is, there is no, expectation of previous exposure to the language. Then there's SL, which is standard level, which, assumes, I don't know, a year or two at least. I only have in German ab initio and SL. HL doesn't really happen in language. Is that right? Now we better make sure we're straight.
It's available.
It's available, but we don't have kids in that.
We don't have it. Our experience that the difference with SL and HL, there may or may not be, like you said, college credit implications. But then the standard level as opposed to higher level, as opposed to ab initio, just have the same tasks, just tiered down a little more.
Right.
For obviously a higher level, a more standard level, and then an initial learner level.
Right.
So that's kind of how I've always seen it and approached it.
And from my understanding, it just as a grand picture of the whole program, to get the credits that are guaranteed you if you pass the program, you have to have so many HL level classes and so many, and then the rest can be SL or ab initio or whatever for language.
Yeah.
But anyway, to answer the question about the assessments that have to happen throughout the year, the tasks, it kind of depends on the level, but for the most part, that's like you said, Roger, just, the size and the scope of what they're doing. Like the tasks themselves are very similar. So, for example, the first task that they encounter about three tasks. And the first one is the written task. And this is all done the last year of their time in the program. All of these tasks are, the first task they run into the last year of their program is the written task. And that's done over a couple months where they have to select a topic, an approved topic within the IB curriculum. And then they take that topic, they do some research, they have to find some in the target language resources. They have to use those and cite those in their paper. And there's a word count expectation is how they measure it. And also depending on the level you're at, the way you break up your paper can vary a little bit. So for example, ab initio, which are never having had the language before kids, the very beginners, that by the end of their program will have had at least 2 years in the language. They have like a three paragraph written thing. The first one is what they discovered in this topic about the target language or in the target culture. The second paragraph is a comparison between the target culture and your own culture. And then the third paragraph is a reflection on what you discovered and what you learned. And the written task can be presented in multiple formats, or, you know, there's a selection of about 10 formats or something like that.
I can tell you actually.
Just off the top of my head, maybe 10 to 15.
That's for the SL level.
Is ab initio can choose too, can they?
No.
I was a little surprised, like the three paragraph things.
Uh huh. That's different than SL. SL's okay, two paragraphs, or two things that you have to address. You have to give a rationale for why you've chosen your topic. And then you present all the information. That's kind of basically what you have, right?
And all in the language, even the rationale, which sometimes throws students.
Right.
Yeah.
The written task is basically the same in both, just slightly different formatting rules and things. But you pick a topic that's approved. You can pick a Miles might be right. It might be limited for ab initio, but basically you have different ways you can present it. Like I have an SL student this year. So SL, remember, is the level above ab initio, and he's doing an interview. So a kind of a simulated interview, but with real facts built into a fabricated interview. But he has to include all those things, in there. So anyway, that's the written task, and all of it's done in the target language. There's a lot of reflection in there. There's a lot of just information about cultural things over there and the target culture and cultural versus cultural things here, in their native culture, I guess. So anyway, that's the written task, and that happens over several months. As teachers, we're allowed limited oversight for their project. So it's really done mostly by them, and we're allowed one real look. But we also can't just correct the whole thing. You know, we're allowed one real look at it to give them some pointers and point out some things, and they take it back.
General feedback.
Yeah. General feedback. General feedback.
For example, Roger, an example of general feedback on this written task.
So I remember a few years ago, I had a student, who the gender matching was kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
Meaning an item, the article that goes with it needs to match gender.
Right.
So if the item is masculine, the article needs to be masculine. And that was just kind of all over the place. So, instead of pointing to specifics, I just said, you know, make sure that you're aware of your gender matching, and just kind of left it at that. And it kind of stunk, but I didn't feel comfortable going any further than that.
Yeah.
And, there was one that a student, she did a pamphlet or a brochure, and on the back had the address, telephone number, all that information was in English. And I couldn't point to that. So I just said, make sure that everything is in the target language. And that actually ended up not ever getting caught by the student. But I mean, that's how I took general feedback.
Yeah. For me, there was one year where, and as I was explaining this to my IB students, they came up with the impression that I couldn't help them at all, which, I mean, to some extent is true. But my help more, and our help as a teacher more comes in basically daily class.
Right.
And unfortunately, that or those groups of students had a habit of doing homework from other classes during French class.
That never so happens with IB students.
That never happens with any student, right? It's not just IB students, but that was part of one of the issues is all the instruction where they were getting specific feedback on just general, proficiency structures, and that was not entirely, it more or less fell on deaf ears or not listening ears, right? So for me, sometimes the feedback for some students feels like I'm not helping them, but it could be an example of, like, with the ab initio writing, you've got three sections. The first section is a description. Second section is a comparison, or of differences or similarities between, cultures, target cultures in your own culture. And then the C is a reflection. An example for me would be just make sure, like on the reflection, there are three questions you have to answer. Make sure you're addressing all the components of section C, for example, kind of what you were just basically saying. And yes, it kind of stinks that we can't give them more help, but that's what we're supposed to be doing every day in class, really.
Right.
Is trying to give them that help. I don't know if that's a good point for me to move on with that, or if you want to.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I think the point of not being able to help them is not just because it's like a test. I mean, that's part of it. It's like a test and they got to show us what they can do. But like Connie was saying, the idea of IB in general is to have these kids kind of go out and look at these things themselves and present their own work, mm-hmm. and be able to say in the end, look at all the stuff I learned how to do and research and present myself. And, so that's just part of the holistic education of a kid in the IB program.
Right. Yeah. One thing I like to do to help my students, like Miles says, is every day in class is your preparation for, or your direct contact and direct teaching to these things. And, I try to use as many, authentic resources and materials as I can. Like I mentioned before, I was fortunate enough to go to Mexico to study my master's program, and I brought back as much stuff as I could think of would be helpful. So I've got all kinds of brochures and pamphlets and all kinds of different things. And so just exposing them to that and seeing the format, what that looks like in the target language and culture, so they're familiar with those things. And then, anyway.
Can I clarify one other thing that it took me a while to figure out as a teacher in IB is they always talk about external and internal.
Yeah.
Like I really did not understand that until after my first year. And I think I even asked an IB student, what do they call this, internal and external? It's just really where it's rated, where it's graded. Does it happen in the school by the teacher of the student or by the IB organization? Is that right?
Yeah.
Got that right now.
Yeah. And then I guess we also, we'll talk about other tasks here in a second. I guess one that I kind of left out, and I'll explain why in a minute, but one that I kind of left out was the interactive oral activity. And I kind of left that out because that's one where, the students are to be given three separate opportunities to have, interactive type activities where there's interacting with one another, and it can be a variety of things. It can be a debate. It can be a presentation where they have to present something, field questions. It can be all kinds of things. And so you just do that throughout the course of the year, and then you take their highest score and you submit that to IB. No questions asked. They get those points that you've awarded them for that. That's one that's kind of easy for me to leave out because we do so many things like that. And I identify well beforehand which things are going to be those things. But I don't necessarily tell the students about it. And maybe that's shame on me. But because I don't want them to panic or worry that, like, oh no, this is big. I just want them to do what they do every day in class because they do such a great job.
It's a regular, regular thing.
And I'll jump in right there. That's something that's specifically for SL. Ab initio students do not.
Yeah, that's true.
Do not have that. That's just SL.
They just do the.
However, like you just said, that stuff we do every day in class. Yeah. You're going to try to get them to have conversations and discussions, and that's a normal thing, regardless of the level, whether you're IB or not. We want them to do that. As far as preparation, though, there's not really, in my mind, I've never really sat them down. I was like, okay, right now we're preparing on your written, we're doing practice that will be beneficial on your written task for IB. No. we do written tasks all the time. We've got term assessments, mid-year assessments that all have a written component to it. We're almost every day writing in quote journals and writing, like my upper level classes are writing postcards to each other because they're living in different countries, but not really. We're pretending, using our imagination. So we're always preparing for the written portion, and on those they're able to get more specific feedback. So they're able to work on things throughout the year. It's really just doing stuff in class. And I think Davis School District, we've done a fantastic job with the curriculum in aligning it, levels one up through an AP, aligning it with not only the AP themes, but also the IB themes. For example, when they come down to try to figure out what topic, the students are given a list of some themes to choose from, and they're broken down like individual and society, like routines and education and that sort of thing, leisure and work, urban and rural. I can't say this word. Urban and rural environment. Is it rural? Is that
it? Rural?
Rural. Yeah. Rural. It's one of those hard words. Anyway, so those are the themes, and they're every one of our units fits within those themes. So we're always covering these things. And when it comes down to the written assessment, it's just trying to add that extra component of culture, which again is stuff we talk about every day in language classes, whether the students realize it or not. As you learn a language, you learn the culture of that target country. So, and granted, there are different countries that speak the languages that we teach, but anyway. So as far as preparation goes, really it's just making sure your students are writing and that they understand and they can use their language in I don't want to say abstract ways, but they can try to describe things and explain things using the limited vocabulary they may have in different ways and different methods to be able to talk around what they're trying to say if they can't say something specifically. But I mean, I don't know about you, Roger, but I don't really have anything that I've nailed down. Like, this is what you have to do to be able to get better. It's really just write. The more you write, the better you're going to get. The more you write about topics that are important to you, which I try to do in class anyway, the better you're going to get. And that's really all there is to it, in my opinion.
Right. And I think, like you say, our curriculum is really built to incorporate all those things. So at a variety of levels, we'll talk about travel, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a natural thing to do to have them create a travel brochure.
Yeah. I will say with the ab initio versus SL, ab initio, you've got one format for your written task.
Oh, okay.
Just one format. You do your research. You follow the sections. I don't want to get into each individual section again, but you just write that out. Whereas SL, you can have really any sort of format. Like you just mentioned, a travel brochure. I think a way to help students there, and again, this is perfect stuff to do every day in class, is find examples of travel brochures. Now, that's not a written task, but they have to be able to read it and understand what a travel brochure really consists of.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a perfect example. And sometimes it may not be a direct writing correlation, but being able to read different news articles, for example, or different presentations and that, those are different. You're not directly practicing writing, but in a way you are, if that makes sense. You are. It's indirectly practicing writing. You know, they say the more you read, the better your vocabulary gets.
Yeah.
If your vocabulary is better, generally you're going to write better, right?
The next IB task that we'll take a look at is the individual oral. So, Miles, you want to break that down a little bit?
Yeah. Now, it's different for SL versus ab initio, slightly. Some differences. So requirements for ab initio, and I'll help let you help me with SL, Roger, because I haven't had, and I guess Brandon, sorry, to select just Roger.
This is my first year doing SL, so I'm.
Oh. Anyway.
I'm right in the throes.
For ab initio, let's say, for example, I've got 10 students. I have a collection of images, and the images need to contain, I mean, it's hard to describe, really. The images are of cultural events going on. There needs to be a lot going on in the picture, but it can't be too widespread so you can't see faces or you can't pick and choose three or four people and talk about them.
It's like stock photos, kind of.
Kind of, yeah. It's hard to explain, really, but they have an image, and the students get to look at this image for 15 minutes, and they can take whatever notes they need to as they're looking at the image. So they look at this image for 15 minutes, and they're taking notes at the same time. And it's up to them. I prefer they take notes in French, obviously. But they take notes for 15 minutes and they try to describe the image as best they can and pick personalities in the image and talk about who this person is and why do you think they're there and what are they doing, and they need to try to talk about what do you think happened just before the picture was taken, and what do you think was going to happen after, and what's happening. And for the most part, they're just making the characters up. They may not know who the picture's of, but they'll just, you know, his name's Joe or her name is Joe, and they're from New Jersey. And they're in Belgium, and they're just coming from eating dinner, and they're going to some celebration, you know, that sort of a thing. They need to be able to describe it. So they've got 15 minutes to take notes on it. And then for the actual oral assessment, they sit down with me and we'll start the recording. And then for roughly 2 minutes, they need to describe the picture. Using only their notes, they need to be able to describe that picture as best as they can. Okay. And then after those couple of minutes, I may ask some more questions, try to get to pull some more details from them, to pull some more information from those questions. And that might take, we're looking at maybe another couple of minutes for that. So the student describes it for a couple of minutes. I'll ask questions to try to pull more information for another couple of minutes. And then I'll try to pose one or two questions about their written assignment that they would have already done, their written task that they've already submitted. So I know what it's about. I'll just ask them, you know, why did you pick this topic, or why are you passionate about this? Whatever it may be. Try to get some more information from them. What did you find out? Is it different than what you expected? And then after that, we'll lead into just a regular everyday conversation and talk about their life and how things have been at school and what's going to happen after you graduate. All told, the entire interview conversation is around, I think, minimum like 7 or 8 minutes, maximum 10. Mm-hmm. So there's some leeway in there, like 2 or 3 minutes about the picture, 1 or 2 minutes more about me asking questions about the picture, another minute or two asking questions about their written assignment, and then to finish with just an interview. I get to be Larry King, but in French. I'll wear the suspenders. They won't know who I am. It'll be great.
Yeah, the SL version of the individual oral is just a little bit different from what you've described. So yeah, our SL students will get 2 pictures. They choose one. I think they have the potential of using both if they needed it. But they choose one, and there will be some text on there. A caption will be on there. And then the student will have, again, 15 minutes to kind of prepare their thoughts. I can't remember the way IB words it, but their notes, they can't just take notes and notes and notes. During their preparation time, they can write working notes, which they define as approximately 10 short points. So like my first year working with SL students, I wasn't really sure how to direct them. I just read that and just said, you know, take that for how you'll take it.
So basically bullet points?
Yeah.
I guess that makes me think for the ab initio, I mean, we don't want them to write down their entire presentation. It is going to be more, these are the things I want to cover, but.
Okay.
But they're not limited to 10 points.
Yeah. And, my SL students need to speak for 3 to 4 minutes, just give a presentation of what they see, linking that to one of the IB topics and the target culture. So they'll go for 3 to 4 minutes on that. And then we have a 5 to 6 minute conversation. Where I view my job is really just pulling more details out of them, helping show off the depth to which they can speak about a topic. And then I gather up their things, and I keep those, and I just look over their notes to make sure they didn't go outside of what IB has asked. And this one girl, my first year, she really only had maybe 5 or 6 bullet points, but she just had these key words that just triggered her mind, like, I need to talk about that, and then that, and then that. And it's kind of hard to describe, but looking at it, I just thought, like, holy cow, her whole conversation is right in those few bullet points. Mm-hmm. She just nailed it. It was really impressive, really cool what she was able to do. So Brandon, any tips on how we can prep students for their individual oral within the ethical realm of what IB gives us?
We just have a teleprompter, so when they're, I don't know why we would even need a teleprompter, because it's recorded audio.
Yeah.
Right.
I think the unethical way to do it would be to say, this is exactly what it's going to look like, and let's practice this 50 times, and then you'll do it. But if you, kind of like the written task preparation and like preparation for all these tests, it kind of should just be the way of your classroom that they feel like they've done this before and that it's not really a surprise. So you can build, I think you can build assignments and you should build assignments and activities and even assessments of your own throughout the year that model these, but you don't come out and say, this is exactly what it's going to look like. And you don't have to do it exactly like it, but just get them familiar with and comfortable with the idea that they can look at things and talk about them and, think on their feet a little bit. And so they just have to have, just like with any other assessment, they have to feel like when they get to that point, I've done this 100 times in class, really. And, or I've done 100 things and they all kind of dance around this one idea and I can apply all that to doing this exactly like it is on that IB test. So we kind of brought that up last week I was gone, but the week before that we were talking about assessments and what's ethical and that there's teaching to the test. And how did you word it? Not teaching to the test, but then there's also teaching.
There's teaching to the test and teaching to the test. No, teaching to the test.
There's two ways of teaching to the test. One's ethical and one is not.
Yeah,
one,
basically yeah. Teaching the skills as opposed to the exact knowledge right, you're going to
yeah.
need. To.
Yeah, that's exactly. So, and that's what you do with any of these things, like any test in any subject. The kids have to be well prepared by things that are tailored to give them the skills that they need to perform well on any test in any situation. So that's what you do with individual oral. And I think we've also mentioned with proficiency and wanting to address all modalities that coming up with speaking and listening things is a lot harder for us to do than the written or reading and writing things. Just traditionally reading and writing, coming up with those, we've done that a lot because it's a little easier. And anyway, so you just have to be really intentional that they're having speaking and listening. Individual oral in particular, speaking and interpersonal experiences throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my favorite activities to help, and this just to add on the as far as the unethical would be if you're practicing throughout the year, aside from not telling them, don't use the same pictures obviously again.
Right.
But I like to occasionally throughout the year I'll have a slideshow of like 3 or 4 pictures, and then give them. And it's basically the test, but give them 5 to 8 minutes, write down some notes, how you can describe this picture. And then, with a partner, then try to describe the picture and draw it out, just not based on what you saw, but the description, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Just different ways to describe what's happening and occasionally we'll have a picture with a bunch of people on it. And then, what kind of questions would you ask somebody to get to know what's happening? Like, what would you ask to find out who these people are? Then they can work on, being able to be creative and invent stories about people, invent information, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But those are things you can do all the time. Circumlocution activities, trying to talk around what you don't know how to say, are really good.
The quintessential family circumlocution game is Taboo. You guys play Taboo?
Been a while.
I haven't really tried this in Minecraft, but yeah, the little annoying buzzer. But there's a word you're trying to get your team to say
without you
saying it.
Oh.
Or about 4 or 5 really closely associated words. So I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example, but maybe the word is,
they're trying to say toilet instead of John or outhouse or.
Yeah.
Crapper. Can you say crapper on podcast?
It's our podcast.
Better than the alternative, I guess.
Maybe the word is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and you can't say basketball, and you can't say tall.
Bruce Lee.
Anyway, there's like, you can't use like the most obvious descriptors are usually taboo. So anyway, I just wanted to agree with that circumlocution practice is actually probably one of the best things you can do because you're forced to do that in almost any test that you haven't seen before.
Yeah. I think one thing I'm trying to do now, as I want my scores to be better for listening and speaking. So I'm really trying to do what I can to hammer it into their faces. I think what it comes down to with writing and why they're so good at it, so it's so easy to get them to write. Speaking it's so hard because they're so worried about the mistakes and not, and they're not thinking about proficiency, they're thinking about perfection. But anyway, just having the habit of speaking, regardless of what you're saying, just the habit of being able to talk in a language is gonna go miles, no pun intended, towards helping them be better at speaking assessments. If you can, are comfortable speaking the language, regardless of whether or not you know what words you have to use, if you're comfortable using the language, you'll be better at using the language. So the more speaking practice, whether it's interpersonal or presentational, or maybe they're just mumbling to themselves, the more speaking practice we can get them to do, more habitual we can make it in the classroom, I think the better they would score.
So that will bring us to the last part of IB that we'll be discussing today, and that's paper 1 and 2. These are tests that are administered at the very end of the school year. Paper 1 is a text handling exercise, well, a variety of text handling exercises on four written texts. So that the more comfortable I get with IPAs, the more I see paper 1 as just really being kind of the reading comprehension aspect.
Interpretive.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And asks a lot of the same types of questions that we get on the IPA, keyword recognition, type. I forget what the other segment is called that I really like. Like keywords from context, things like that. And then,
like, what do you think the purpose of using this word is, type of a thing, or not? That's probably a bad way to put it.
Like read this text and answer these multiple choice questions.
Kind of,
right?
Yeah. And one thing that I've noticed, is that it seems like they'll basically take a line right out of the text and then just kind of reword it. And then they're asking you to identify a certain aspect or a certain word from it.
Yeah.
And so it's really like, are you getting the concept as you're reading?
Mm-hmm.
Like if we say this exact same thing just in another way that's not necessarily in the text, can you identify it?
Still get the, yeah.
So it's a cool idea. And really the more I look at it, the more it's just exactly what IPAs do. Yeah. Another reason we love IPAs, they go towards everything that we're doing. And then paper 2 is, I view it as basically the written task all over again. They walk in, at least at the SL level, they're handed, 5 different options to work with scenarios and the type of task that they need to produce, but they get to choose. So there is still a lot of, freedom, and they can play to their strengths in that sense, but they're basically reproducing the written task is how I viewed it. And I don't know if you guys have different thoughts on that.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the, I don't know what the title of this full document is, the guidelines or information for IB. I'm in the document now and it's not telling me, but paper 1, I kind of like the way they worded this because it's really simple. So they understanding of 4 written tasks. What did he just say?
Tasks.
I thought so. Understanding of 4 written texts. And then text handling exercises. It's kind of an interesting way to put it, how to handle the text.
Right.
Like, why would they use out of this contextual phrase, what do you think this word is and why, or that sort of a thing. But then the second one, like you mentioned, it's basically a redo of the written assignment or the written task, the section A and B. According to this, section A is out of 7 points. There's a question to be answered from a choice of 2. So they've got two questions they need to answer. And then section B, a question to answer out of a choice of 3. So, and usually those revolve around, it's an email or some sort of a, so they have to be somewhat familiar with, formatting. Like, how would you format an email and that sort of a thing, but.
All right. And that is IB in a nutshell. With that, we will wrap up today's episode. We had initially intended to include advanced placement, concurrent enrollment, and the seal of biliteracy in today's episode. But we have come to the conclusion that talking about International Baccalaureate today has taken a good chunk of time, and we'd like to continue the discussion of advanced placement, concurrent enrollment, and the syllabi literacy in a future episode. Keep in mind that advanced opportunities such as IB are a great way for students to further not just their linguistic skills, but also cultural awareness and understanding. I think that was one thing that really stood out as Connie was describing what International Baccalaureate is all about. It is about the whole student, and it's not just a program to help them get college credit. It really is for the betterment of the individual, so that they can go on and better society.
And it's a big part of Clearfield High. I mean, just in our district, there are two schools that offer IB, and IB back east, I think, is a little more common, and it's kind of moved out this way. But Clearfield's really been a trailblazer in that sense, kind of adopting the IB program.
Yeah, there's schools somewhere that are some places that are were an IB school.
Right.
Like out near the San Diego Zoo, I forget the name of it because I didn't write it down.
Like everyone's in the program.
A year and a half ago, and had a big old, this is an IB school, had a big old poster or a big old sign on the school.
Yeah.
Near the old zoo. We went and saw a panda.
And with that, I'll say hasta luego.
A plus.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Thanks for getting down with Level Up. What's Davin doing this week? Davin's off finding Waldo.
Since we're recording tonight, he's down at the Jazz game getting ready to watch the unveiling of the new uniforms in court.
Oh, are they wearing that tonight?
You are just a hater, man.
You'll come around, Roger.
They're not the same, man. It's not the Jazz. It's like I'm watching the Lakers out there. Who gives a turd what they're wearing? They can't have advertisements on. They don't want adverts on their jerseys. It's like NASCAR. What, because they got a little patch on there? My goodness.
Yeah, that's where it starts. Where does it end, buddy?
I don't care where it ends. We don't care about that. Do you really mean to tell me you're watching it for the jersey?
No, but...
You're watching it for the game.
That's...
Let's go Jazz!
That is not...